Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Oliver Davy, Head of Data and Operations at Maggie's Centre. Again, thanks for being on the show. I'm particularly excited about this one, but one thing that's been a bit of a sore point for me at the moment is I've run out of things to listen to and read. You know, always looking for the next big thing. What are you kind of engaging with at the moment on the content sphere?
That's really interesting. I personally kind of gravitate towards the immediacy of the organization that I'm working towards. But obviously, there's that kind of self-development side. So I do keep on touch with the LinkedIn and all the social media side. And occasionally, something perks my interest. But it's the usual things. You know, I'm very excited for the charity sector in terms of the predictive side. You know, everybody talks about big data, but it comes down to that kind of predictive and managing big sets of data, less big with the charity world. But I don't have any specific publication that I can like name now. But I'm sure I can sort of dig out the ones that I've been reading recently. But it mainly is the stuff that's fast moving through the social media side, because colleagues that I've worked with in the past that I'm connected with often share articles, and that's where I get most of my information. That and the Institute of Fundraising, the Direct Marketing Association, of which both I'm members of, and the British Computer Society. You know, I'd attend some of those lectures and talks, and that really is where I kind of get most of my informed information from.
Do you are you a big advocate of kind of external networking? It's actually a topic we've covered on the show before, but it's always nice to get that kind of external feedback on you know, projects that you're working on, you know, career moves, you know, the meaning of life, etc.
Yeah, it's really interesting because tomorrow I'm attending one of our supplier conferences. It's Access Group. They provide our CRM. And they're talking about GDPR. They're talking about how to get the best out of the product. But it's also a networking because there'll be other charities very similar to the one I'm working for at the moment, Maggie's. And that's an opportunity to both network and exchange information. And then on Friday, I'm attending the Institute of Fundraising Tech Conference. And that was really interesting last year because they had someone speaking about a PCI breach. And certainly that was at the forefront of some of the stuff that I was doing then. And to be compliant and make sure that, you know, we limit the risk in terms of that for the organization. So again, it tends to be the immediate stuff, and other things that came out of that were, I think there was the content manager or the head of digital from the British Museum, and he was very eloquent in what he came across to say about the future for the British Museum and the new technologies and what they're putting in place. So, yeah, I agree with you. Networking is quite a key element to my information kind of absorption.
Well, information in general is very difficult. It's an interesting topic anyway, and how we get information and how we can trust information and all this kind of thing. Now we look at the internet, and the beauty of the internet is the amount of information that we can get a hold of.
at such a quick rate. But now the problem is, how can we validate the information that we're being told, right? It's kind of an interesting problem to have, probably a good problem to have in some ways. But, you know, managing and networking, connecting with people to ensure that the information you're receiving is right, is quite a challenging one now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And a lot of the groundwork that I see when I move from charity to charity is that data assurance, that validating, that putting in those kind of processes and organizational structures to make sure that the data that we hold and receive is correct and validated, because we interact with supporters all the time, and if we have the wrong information and we verbalize that or communicate that in whatever form incorrectly, then that has disastrous effects. I mean, I recently went in for an operation in hospital and spoke to my insurance company, and they called me by the wrong name. So I corrected them and I said, no, that's not my name. And I got a call back and they again called me by the wrong name. So, you know, it didn't bode well with me. And then I complained and we went through that. And so it's key that there's a duty of care. And I think often people don't realize how far-reaching accepting invalid information or using incorrect information is, both in terms of regulation and governance, but also reputational damage and risk to the organization.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's even more of a premium, obviously, in kind of the charity world as well. I guess that kind of brings me a little bit to your kind of background. We haven't really gone over it yet, but have you always been involved in sort of charitable organizations?
Yeah, I suppose for the most part of my career, I have. My first job was out of university, was working for Medical Research Council with the commercial director. And so that was one sector that I started with. And the first kind of full-time role, and that was kind of a six-month kind of contract, but the first full-time role was going into banking as an intern. And I decided actually that wasn't right for me. And so I accepted a job at the National Gallery in London. And I quickly found that this was much more of an environment that I appreciated and liked, and had much more of a meaningful relationship with both the organization and the people that were working there. So that was really the start of my choice. And it kind of went on from there. I worked in the financial sector beyond that, in terms of independent financial advisors, and helped them set up a UK-wide network of offices. And that was really through a friend that wanted me to come and help him and his company out. But then from then on, really, it has been in the charity world.
What's the what comes first for you? Is it the project and the task at hand, or is really the vision and the end goal the true driving factor for you?
I think that seeing the umbrella, the overall picture, the vision and the goal has always been kind of the way in which my brain is wired. And that will always be the case, I believe. But I'm quite practical in many ways. So that comes secondary, because I think you need buy-in, you need to have the right vision, you need to have the right goal, and the rest kind of falls out of that for me.
So talking about the data and the work within data, was that kind of always the plan?
Yeah, I don't think that many organizations have kind of realized that data is a key asset to an organization, probably one of the top key assets, with the buildings and the people. So it didn't really. It kind of, I think, it's evolved with the industry. I mean, obviously, the commercial organizations have moved much faster. With the sector that I work in, the charity third sector, they have been a bit late to recognize that. But, you know, a good example of that would be, typically you'd have a database manager in an organization. But we've moved on very much from that, and it's much more data focused. Although it's got data in it, it's not just database. It's everything around it, the analytics, the way in which it comes in and out of the organization in multiple places. So I think that for me, it's been a natural evolution, but I kind of recognized it before a lot of the charities recognized it. And I suppose I could position myself in learning and being in a position to be approached as I am quite regularly.
What kind of are some of the general characteristics that you see that, I suppose, one, that you see a lot of, but two, that are kind of necessary to be, prolific in the role?
Yeah, I suppose, in terms of data, I mean, even, techie people or geeky people, if we want to kind of slide a label occasionally on these things, they tend to be the people that I've interacted with, both in terms of working with and in my teams, but also accessing support for a product that I have at home. The skills are very honed in terms of being able to respond to a very in a technical way, but perhaps not honed in a communication way to multiple levels of ability. So sometimes it's quite difficult to understand somebody that has a passion for data, who's very good at data, because their communication skills might be less developed. That's less so now, but still I see it. So I find that when I recruit, I do look for very good communication skills as well as the technical skills, and that can be quite a tough demand. I've interviewed a lot of people over the last 2 years, and I still see not very good communication skills. So I think that's one thing that people can develop, both in terms of their interview technique, but also when they're interacting with colleagues, because data is coming in and coming out at all different levels in an organization. It could be the PA to the CEO, it could be the CEO, it could be the COO, it could be just someone managing events in charity, it could be anybody really. And I think that the person that's in that data role, that data seat, needs to be able to adjust to the ability the other side. So I've always been kind of good at that, and I suppose that's why I've kind of developed into the role that I'm in at the moment and manage teams the way I do. I think from a technical point of view, a lot of the charities that I've worked for, I see overskilled in the wrong qualification. For example, the arts world, everybody that wants to be in the arts world has an arts qualification, but maybe they don't have the specific qualification for the role. And so a lot of what I see is learning on the job, and that's great, that does work, but what you don't get is someone hitting the ground running when they start the role, and then it's that learning and imparting of information from people that have been in the previous role, but that perhaps passed on bad learning as well. So I'm very conscious to make sure people get trained really well when they're in a role that perhaps they don't have a complete skill set. So I'm very attentive to that in terms of development, individual soft development. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And, I think that you look at kind of management, it plays such a key role now, I think, in the realms of IT, because what we've seen is such a shift from just having a select group of people who can do a niche specific skill on technology 20 years ago to now, where you really need a dynamic person who's willing to learn. You can't just hire a person for a role anymore. Like, they have to be adaptive. So, I what's your kind of management adjustments been over the years?
Yeah, that's quite interesting as well. I think, I've come from a very much a doing role at the beginning. So, I've been reporting up and, can see the frustrations like everybody else does. And then moving into that management role, I certainly have kind of wanted to continue that kind of doing thing, but ultimately I've had to let that go and have to spend more time in looking at the development and having those one-to-ones, taking away that time, delegating more. And in terms of the style that I tend to approach is much more of a trusting, and I don't micromanage. People talk about an open door policy, but to me, that's forming a meaningful relationship with each member of staff. Remembering what's going on in their life, as well, and making sure that they feel part of the team. And that takes a lot of time. You have to keep a finger on the pulse of all the projects that are going on as well, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's definitely evolved from being less kind of or pulling back, less on the practical, because I always love to dig down into an issue, and certainly I still do. If one of my team needs me to kind of sit down and look at the SQL coding, or just bounce off ideas on how something might be implemented structurally in terms of the infrastructure of an organization, then I'll sit down and have that time with them too.
Fantastic. Yeah. And do you miss the hands-on stuff?
Yeah, a little bit, but I think I can achieve a lot more doing what I'm doing, and I like that too. So I could achieve a lot less with just me, but with a team, I can achieve a lot more. And to have that, as I said initially, that vision, that goal, that overall umbrella view is really where I've come from all the time. So for me, it's like a realization, less frustration, much more achievement. And that for me is quite rewarding. I do get a lot of reward out of that.
Fantastic. What's the, I suppose that's kind of, I guess the obvious answer then is, the biggest motivators for you internally are, seeing the team succeed, and kind of working towards that goal. I suppose I'd be interested to know how you kind of communicate the ongoing vision to your team. And then from a personal perspective, the vision overall that you're working towards long-term that can continuously motivate you? Or is it more about what do you enjoy on a day-to-day basis that's kind of the thing that keeps you ticking over?
Yeah, I suppose the two things that sort of motivate me are seeing the staff develop, making sure that they can grow and expand and eventually move on. And I've had many team members move on after, two or three or, even more years. And it's just nice to see that they're going into their next role. And I think letting people do that and being acknowledging of that, I think is quite respectful and shows the rest of the kind of team that they can do that. And so that's kind of a real motivator for me. And of course, then achieving the organizational goals is the other big win for me. And I like to see that we kind of move on fast if everybody's engaged. Yeah, I absolutely love coming to work and I love what the organization does. So for me, it's a big part of working anywhere, buy into what the organization does. And Maggie's for me is that at the moment. And what we do for as an organization for people, as well as how we treat people internally and culturally, forming those meaningful relationships with staff and colleagues and supporters and certainly the people that visit our centres and get that emotional, practical and psychological support that we provide as our core charitable goal is all really kind of motivational for me. The previous organisation I worked for was the Soldiers Charity, and again, I had high buy-in to that. So the Army Benevolent Fund, the Soldiers Charity, and that again was key. And I think that's been a theme through my career working at the National Gallery, very much interested in art and architecture. The Tate is the same. So I think that really kind of motivates me. In terms of motivating other staff and sharing that vision, I always make sure that there's kind of a one-to-one communication continuously. It's kind of that stabilizing influence. So they get some time with me, I get some time with them, and we go through the usual things that you'd have a one-to-one. But also outside of that, I think, there's this project meetings, but also at Maggie's we also have a kitchen table in all our centres and certainly in our offices. So a good time for me is catching up with staff and colleagues at the kitchen table over lunch or, over a coffee or tea. And I think that does form stronger relationships. In terms of kind of the actual practical vision of, the nitty-gritty, I always have a yearly group meeting after I've kind of agreed my budget and the things that I want to achieve with the senior management. And then I take people away from the office and we kind of, I present and I ask all my other teams to present. And then we kind of share, we have some feedback and we look at a period of adjustment. I think in terms of engaging through the organization, before it gets to the team or sometimes after, I then share it with the heads of around the organization because it's important that when my team interact with those other departments, everybody's on the same page. It makes it much easier to get things done when people are expecting something because they've been primed with it and there is that buy-in. So that's how I tend to share the vision and make sure we can set up the right environment to achieve the vision.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is charity always a difficult one with technology? Because like you were talking about earlier, it's playing catch up constantly in the realm of the technology.
Well, I think one of the big things is being able to fund it. So with a commercial organization, it might be a little easier to do that. It's constant fight for budget. I mean, there's constant fight for budget in most all organizations, but I think every penny, unconscious every penny that's donated really needs to be effectively used. So there can't be vanity projects. There can't be those things. And some of those are technology driven. Most things now are technology driven. But at the same time, we do want to save time. We do want to automate. We do want to make sure that we have better insight, infographics to inform the different areas of the organization. So there's a kind of a balancing act. And that's kind of part of the vision and looking at it. So
it's interesting, though, that it seems I quite like that about charity, that they have to be disciplined and they can only engage with things that are, essentially business critical, right? And so I think that is a good habit builder. It may restrict innovation to some extent, but it's a really good habit forming thing, especially within technology when the temptation to work on these kind of vanity projects or, non-critical projects is always there because there's just so much interesting tech to get your hands on. So it's in a way, it creates quite a good environment to kind of execute on projects.
I mean, if you strip it back, I suppose it comes down to the thing that I always find, and businesses have organically evolved. Either they've got organically evolved a system and it's got to a certain point where they now need to kind of deal with it, or there are several people been in an organization that have created these kind of inefficient ways of working, whether that be with data or process or technology. So it tends to be the same thing. Whether it's in a commercial organization, it's just having that stripped back vision to then bring it to a point where you can build it back up again. And it's the same challenge I find everywhere, really. And people say to me, are we the worst organization for our data? And I go, no, everybody that I've encountered has similar challenges. But it's just being able to have the right way of stripping it back, having that vision and moving forward with it quickly and engaging with the groups of people around to get those decisions made. And often in the charitable sector, the decision making is very slow. And the current charity I work for, it's very quick, which is really good. And in fact, the soldiers charity was very quick. I think it was probably the army influence, because half of the staff were serving. So they were able to make those quick decisions. That's not to say that all the organisations I work for are slow decisions, but it's certainly been a theme with some, in that not everybody's engaged or understands the importance of that. So, yeah.
What are you kind of really excited about at the moment in the space? I mean, you look at, data, I think I consider it to be the most exciting space at the moment. From your perspective, on the application side of data, are the most compelling for you that are kind of that we're working on or we're going to be working towards in the next few years?
Well, I think personal insights is always good. I love technology. I love data. I'm very involved with it. When I see people use it and understand it and then get better insight out of it, that's like quite, that's great for me. A friend of mine showed me their Santander bike, the old Boris bike. I got an email, showed him how many calories he burnt, showed him how many miles he'd driven. Great infographic, and I think that the space moving forward with new technology in terms of tags and all of those other stuff, maybe not hit the charity sector, but I'm very excited from our point of view in being able to give our supporters better communication using technology such as predictive analytics. It's already been used by lots of commercial organisations, but less so with the charitable sector. Giving better insight internally, I think, for me. And I know that's kind of old hat to some people, but in my sector, it's kind of underdeveloped. So it's kind of moving forward. I think that the practicality still is at the forefront of where we're at in terms of moving not to the future, but to the current. But it is an exciting space. I think definitely people realize, as I've said before, data is one of the key assets to an organization now. And it's being recognized as that, both through the new GDPR regulation coming through in May next year and more people understanding that. But also, as people, as you said, need to assimilate more information, they're more engaged because when they get the insight that they want and they can understand it quickly and visually, then that's very exciting too.
Fantastic. Good point to finish on, Oliver. Thank you for joining me today. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.